quest of a visiting dignitary, and it was certainly an honor to sit at the Coggins' own table. But to send his son to do it. Kaol considered his next words carefully, then simply chose the most obvious one.
Why?
Surely the family wished to keep close to one another after losing their youngest member. Inviting strangers to join them. The prince's jaw tightened. Not a man used to veiling his emotions, as his three elder siblings were.
Argon reports our palace is safe of spies from Duke Parrington's forces, that his agents have not yet come. I am not of that belief. And Sartak.
The prince caught himself, as if not wanting to bring in his brother, or potential ally. Caution grimaced.
There was a reason I chose to live amongst soldiers. The double talk of this court.
Kaol was tempted to say he understood, had felt that way for most of his life. But he asked,
You think Parrington's forces have infiltrated this court?
How much did Caution or Argon know of Parrington's forces? Know the truth of the Volg King who wore Parrington's skin? Or the armies he commanded, worse than any their imaginations might conjure? But that information? He'd keep that to himself. See if it could somehow be used, if Argon and the Coggin did not know of it. Caution rubbed at his neck.
I do not know if it is Parrington, or someone from Terrasen, or Melisande, or Wendlin. All I know is that my sister is now dead.
Kaol's heart stumbled a beat, but he dared ask.
How did it come about?
Grief flickered in Caution's eyes.
Tumaloon was always a bit wild, reckless, prone to moods. One day happy and laughing, the next withdrawn and hopeless.
His throat bobbed.
They say she leaped from her balcony because of it. Duva and her husband found her later that night.
Any death in a family was devastating. But a suicide.
I'm sorry,
Kaol offered quietly. Caution shook his head, sunlight from the garden dancing on his black hair.
I do not believe it. My Tumaloon would not have jumped.
My Tumaloon. The words told enough about the prince's closeness to his younger sister.
You suspect foul play? All I know is that no matter Tumaloon's moods, I knew her, as I know my own heart.
He put a hand over it.
She would not have jumped.
Kaol considered his words carefully once again.
As sorry as I am for your loss. Do you have any reason to suspect why a foreign kingdom might have engineered it?
Caution paced a few steps.
No one within our lands would be stupid enough. Well, no one within Terrasen or Otterlin would ever do such a thing. Even to manipulate you into this war.
Caution studied him for a heartbeat.
Even a queen, who was once an assassin herself?
Kaol didn't let one flicker of emotion show.
Assassin she might have been, but Aelin had hard lines that she did not cross. Killing or harming children was one of them.
Caution paused before the dresser against the garden wall, adjusting a gilded box on its polished dark surface.
I know. I read that in my brother's reports, too. Details of her kills.
Kaol could have sworn the prince shuddered before he added,
I believe you.
No doubt why the prince was even having this conversation with him. Caution went on.
Which leaves not many other foreign powers who might do it. And Parrington at the top of that short list. But why target your sister?
I do not know.
Caution paced another few steps.
She was young, guileless. She rode with me amongst the Dargon, our mother clans. Had no Sulde of her own yet.
At Kaol's narrowed brows, the prince clarified.
It is a spear all Dargon warriors carry. We bind strands of our favored horse's hair to the shaft, beneath the blade. Our ancestors believed that where those hairs waved in the wind, there our destinies waited. some of us still believe in such things. But even those who think it mere tradition, we bring them everywhere. There is a courtyard in this palace where my Sulde and those of my siblings are planted, to feel the wind while we remain at our father's palace, right beside his own. But in death, again, that shadow of grief, in death they are the only object that we keep. They bear the soul of a Dargon warrior for eternity, and are left planted atop a step in our sacred realm. The prince closed his eyes. Now her soul will roam with the wind. Nezrin had said as much earlier. Kaol only repeated,
I'm sorry.
Kashin opened his eyes. Some of my siblings do not believe me about Tumalun. Some do. Our father? He remains undecided. Our mother will not even leave her room thanks to her grief, and mentioning my suspicions might... I cannot bring myself to mention them to her. He rubbed his strong jaw. So I have convinced my father to have you join us at dinner every night, as a gesture of diplomacy. But I should like you to watch with an outsider's eyes, to report on anything amiss. Perhaps you will see something we don't.
Help them, and perhaps receive help in return.
Kaol said baldly,
If you trust me enough to have me do that, to tell me all this, then why not agree to join with us in this war? It is not my place to say or guess.
A trained soldier. Kashin examined the suite, as if assessing any potential enemies lying in wait.
I march only when my father gives the order.
If Parrington's forces were already here, if Morath was indeed behind the princess's murder, it'd be too easy. Too easy to sway the Khagan into siding with Dorian and Aelin. Parrington, Erewhon, was far smarter than that. But if Kaol himself were to win over the commander of the Khagan's terrestrial armies to their cause...
I do not play those games, Lord Westfall,
said Kashin. Reading whatever sparked in Kaol's eyes.
My other siblings are the ones you will wish to convince.
Kaol tapped a finger on the arm of his chair.
Any advice on that front?
Kashin snorted, smiling faintly.
Others have come before you, from kingdoms far richer than your own. Some succeeded, some didn't.
A glance at Kaol's legs, a flicker of pity entering the prince's eyes. Kaol clenched the arms of the chair at that pity, from a man who recognized a fellow warrior.
Wishes for good luck are all I can offer you.
Then the prince was striding for the doors, his long legs eating up the distance.
If Parrington has an agent here,
Kaol said, as Kashin reached the suite doors,
then you've already seen that everyone in this palace is in grave danger. You must take action.
Kashin paused with his hand on the carved doorknob, glancing over his shoulder.
Why do you think I've asked a foreign lord for assistance?
Then the prince was gone, his words hanging in the sweet-scented air. The tone wasn't cruel, wasn't insulting, but the warrior's frankness of it. Kaol struggled to master his breathing, even as the thoughts swirled. He'd seen no black rings or collars, but then he hadn't been looking for them. Had not even considered that the shadow of Morath might have already stretched this far. Kaol rubbed at his chest.
Careful.
He'd have to be careful in this court. With what he said publicly. With what he said in this room, too. Kaol was still staring at the shut door, mulling over all Kashin had implied. When the servant emerged, her tunic and pants replaced by a tied robe of thinnest, sheerest silk. It left nothing to the imagination. He clamped down on the urge to shout for Nezrin to assist him instead.
Only wash me,
he said, as clearly and firmly as he could. She showed no nerves, no tremor of hesitation. And he knew she had done this before, countless times, as she only asked,
Am I... not to your liking.
It was a stark, honest question.
She was paid well for her services. All the servants were. She chose to be here, and another could easily be found at no risk to her status.
You are,
Kaol said, only half-lying, refusing to let his gaze drop below her eyes.
Very pleasing,
he clarified.
But I only want a bath,
he added, just to be sure.
Nothing else from you.
He'd expected her gratitude, but the servant only nodded, unruffled. Even with her, he'd have to be careful with what he said. What he and Nezrin might discuss in these rooms. There hadn't been a sound or flicker of movement behind Nezrin's closed bedroom doors, and there certainly wasn't now. So he motioned to let the servant push his chair into the bathing chamber, veils of steam rippling through the white and blue tiled room. The chair glided over carpet and tile, curving around the furniture with little effort. Nezrin herself had found the chair, in the now vacant healer's catacombs of Rifthold's castle, right before they'd sailed here. One of the few items the fleeing healers had left behind, it seemed. Lighter and sleeker than what he'd expected, the large wheels flanking the seat rotated easily, even when he used the slender metal hand rim to guide them himself. Unlike the stiff bulk of others he'd seen, this chair came equipped with two small front wheels, just on either side of the wooden footrests, each capable of swiveling in any direction he chose. And now, they smoothly turned into the wafting steam of the bathing chamber. A large sunken pool filled most of it, oils gleaming on the surface, interrupted only by scattered drifting petals. A small window high in the far wall peeked into the greenery of the garden, and candles gilded the billowing steam. Luxury. Utter luxury, while his city suffered. While they pleaded for help that had not come. Dorian would have wanted to stay. Only absolute defeat, no chance of survival, would have prompted him to leave. Kaol wondered if his magic had played any part. Helped any of them. Dorian would find his way to safety. To allies. He knew it in his bones, though his stomach continued to roil. There was nothing he could do to help his king from here, save for forging this alliance. Even if every instinct screamed at him to return to Otterlin, to find Dorian, he'd stay the course. Kaol barely noticed the servant removing his boots in efficient tugs, and though he could have done it himself, he barely remarked on her removing his teal jacket, then the shirt beneath. But he dragged himself from his thoughts at last when she began to remove his pants, when he leaned in to help, gritting his teeth as they worked together in stilted silence. It was only when she reached to remove his undershorts that he gripped her wrist. He and Nezrin still hadn't touched each other. Beyond an ill-fated bout on the ship 3 days ago, he hadn't conveyed any sort of desire to take that step once again. He'd wanted to, though. Woke up most mornings aching to, especially when they'd shared that bed in their stateroom. But the thought of being so prone, of not being able to take her the way he'd once done, it had curdled any brimming lust, even while grateful that certain parts of him still undoubtedly worked.
I can get in on my own, Kaol said.
And before the servant could move, he gathered the strength in his arms, his back, and began easing himself from the chair. It was an unceremonious process, one he'd figured out during the long days at sea. First he flicked the locking mechanism on the wheels, the click echoing off the stone and water. With a few motions, he maneuvered himself to the edge of the chair, then removed his feet from the wooden plates and onto the floor, angling his legs to his left as he did so. With his right hand, he gripped the edge of the seat by his knees, while he curled the left into a fist, as he bent over to brace it on the cool, steam-slick tiles. Slippery. The servant only padded over, laid a thick white cloth before him, and backed away. He gave her a grateful, close-lipped smile as he braced his left fist again on the floor, atop the plush cloth, distributing his weight throughout the arm. With an inhaled breath, his right hand still gripping the edge of his chair,
He carefully lowered himself to the ground, swinging his rear away from the chair as his knees bent unbidden. He landed with a thud, but he was on the floor at least, hadn't toppled over as he had the first half dozen times he'd tried it on the ship. Carefully, he scooted to the edge of the pool stairs until he could set his feet into the warm water right atop the second step. The servant strode into the water a heartbeat later, graceful as an egret, her gossamer robe turning as insubstantial as dew while water crept up its length. Her hands were gentle but steady while she gripped him under the arm and helped him hoist himself the last bit into the pool, setting himself down on the top step. Then she guided him down another and another until he was sitting up to his shoulders, eye level with her full, peaked breasts. She didn't seem to notice. And he immediately averted his gaze toward the window as she reached for the small tray of supplies she'd left near the lip of the pool. Oils and brushes and soft-looking cloths. Kaol slid his undershorts off while she turned, setting them with a loud, wet smack upon the edge of the pool. Nezrin still didn't emerge from her room, so Kaol closed his eyes, submitting himself to the servant's ministrations, and wondered what the hell he was going to do. Chapter 4. Of all the rooms in the Torre Chesme, Irene Towers loved this one best. Perhaps it was because the room, located at the very pinnacle of the pale stoned tower and its sprawling complex below, had unparalleled views of the sunset over Antica. Perhaps it was because this was the place where she'd felt the first shred of safety in nearly 10 years. The place she had first looked upon the ancient woman now sitting across the paper and book-strewn desk, and heard the words that changed everything. "You are welcome here, Irene Towers." It had been over 2 years since then. 2 years of working here, living here, in this tower and in this city of so many peoples, so many foods and caches of knowledge. It had been all she'd dreamed it would be, and she had seized every opportunity, every challenge, with both hands, had studied and listened and practiced and saved lives, changed them, until she had climbed to the very top of her class. Until an unknown healer's daughter from Fenharrow was approached by healers old and young, who had trained their entire lives, for her advice and assistance. The magic helped. Glorious, lovely magic that could make her breathless, or so tired she couldn't get out of bed for days. Magic demanded a cost to both healer and patient. But Irene was willing to pay it. She had never minded the aftermath of a brutal healing, if it meant saving a life. Silba had granted her a gift, and a young stranger had given her another gift, that final night in Inish 2 years ago. Irene had no plans to waste either. She waited in silence as the slender woman across from her finished reading through some message on her chronically messy desk. Despite the servant's best efforts, the ancient rosewood desk was always chaotic, covered with formulas or spells or vials and jars brewing some tonic. There were two such vials on the desk now, clear orbs atop silver feet fashioned after ibis legs, being purified by the endless sunshine within the tower. Hafiza, healer on high of the Torre Chesme, plucked up one of the vials, swirled its pale blue contents, frowned, and set it down. "The damned thing always takes twice as long as I anticipate." She asked casually, using Irene's own language, "Why do you think that is?" Irene leaned forward in the worn, tufted armchair on her side of the desk to study the tonic. Every meeting, every encounter with Hafiza, was a lesson, a chance to learn, to be challenged. Irene lifted the vial from its stand, holding it to the golden light of sunset as she examined the thick azure liquid within. "Use?" 10-year-old girl developed a dry cough 6 weeks ago. Saw the physicians, who advised honey tea, rest, and fresh air. Got better for a time.
but returned a week ago with a vengeance. The physicians of the Torre Chesme were the finest in the world, distinguished only from the Torre's healers by the fact that they did not possess magic. They were the first line of inspection for the healers in the tower, their quarters occupying the sprawling complex around its base. Magic was precious, its demands costly enough that some healer on high centuries ago had decreed that if they were to see a patient, a physician must first inspect the person. Perhaps it had been a political maneuver, a bone tossed to the physicians, so often passed over by a people clamoring for the cure-all remedies of magic. Yet magic could not cure all things, could not halt death or bring someone back from it. She'd learned it again and again these past 2 years, and earlier. And even with the protocols with the physicians, Irene still, as she had always done, found herself walking toward the sound of coughing in the narrow, sloped streets of Antica. Irene tilted the vial this way and that. The tonic might be reacting to the heat. It's been unseasonably warm, even for us. With the end of summer finally near, even after 2 years, Irene was still not entirely accustomed to the unrelenting dry heat of the God City. Mercifully, some long-ago mastermind had invented the Bajir, wind-catching towers set atop buildings to draw in fresh air to the rooms below, some even working in tandem with the few underground canals winding beneath Antica to transform hot wind into cool breezes. The city was peppered with the small towers, like 1,000 spears jutting toward the sky, ranging from the small houses made of earthen bricks to the great domed residences full of shaded courtyards and clear pools. Unfortunately, the Torre had predated that stroke of brilliance, and though the upper levels possessed some cunning ventilation that cooled the chambers far below, there were plenty of days when Irene wished some clever architect would take it upon themselves to outfit the Torre with the latest advances. Indeed, with the rising heat and the various fires burning throughout the tower, Hafiza's room was near sweltering, which led Irene to add, "You could put it in a lower chamber, where it's cooler." "But the sunlight needed?" Irene considered. "Bring in mirrors. Catch the sunlight through the window and focus it upon the vial. Adjust it a few times a day to match the path of the sun. The cooler temperature and more concentrated sunlight might have the tonic ready sooner." A little pleased nod. Irene had come to cherish those nods, the light in those brown eyes. "Quick wits save lives more often than magic," was Hafiza's only reply. She'd said it 1,000 times before, usually where Irene was involved, to her eternal pride. But Irene bowed her head in thanks and set the vial back upon its stand. "So," Hafiza said, folding her hands atop each other on the near-glowing rosewood desk. "Irisha informs me that she believes you are ready to leave us." Irene straightened in her seat. The very same chair she'd sat in that first day, she'd climbed the 1,000 steps to the top of the tower and begged for admittance. The begging had been the least of her humiliations that meeting. The crowning moment being when she dumped the bag of gold on Hafiza's desk, blurting that she didn't care what the cost was, and to take it all. Not realizing that Hafiza did not take money from students. No, they paid for their education in other ways. Irene had suffered through endless indignities and degradations during her year working at the backwater White Pig Inn. But she had never been more mortified than the moment Hafiza ordered her to put the money back in that brown pouch. Scraping the gold off the desk like some card player scrambling to collect his winnings. Irene had debated leaping right out the arc of windows towering behind Hafiza's desk. Much had changed since then. Gone was the homespun dress, the too slim body. Though Irene supposed the endless stares of the Torre had kept in check the weight she'd gained from steady, healthy eating, thanks to the Torre's enormous kitchens, the countless markets teeming with food stalls, and the dine-in shops along every bustling street and winding alley. Irene swallowed once, trying and failing to glean the healer on High's face. Hafiza had been the one person here whom Irene could never read, never anticipate. She'd never once shown a display of temper, something that couldn't be said of many of the instructors here, Irisha especially, and had never raised her voice. Hafiza had only three expressions, pleased, neutral, and disappointed. Irene lived in terror of the latter two. Not for any punishment, there was no such thing here. No rations held, no pain threatened. Not like at the White Pig, where Nolan had docked her pay if she stepped out of line or was overgenerous with a customer. Or if he caught her leaving out nightly scraps for the half-feral urchins who had prowled the filthy streets of Inish. She'd arrived here thinking it would be the same. People who took her money, who made it harder and harder to leave. She'd spent a year working at the White Pig due to Nolan's increases in her rent, decreases in her pay, his cut of her meager tips, and knowledge that most women in Inish worked the streets. And his place, disgusting as it had been, was a far better alternative. She told herself never again, until she'd arrived here. Until she'd dumped that gold on Hafiza's desk and had been ready to do it all over, in debt and sell herself just for a chance to learn. Hafiza did not even consider such things. Her work was in direct opposition to the people who did, the people like Nolan. Irene still remembered the first time she'd heard Hafiza say in that thick, lovely accent of hers, nearly the same words that Irene's mother had told her, over and over. They did not charge students or patients for what Silba, goddess of healing, gifted them for free. In a land of so many gods that Irene was still struggling to keep them all straight, at least Silba remained the same. Yet another clever thing the Khaganate had done upon patching together the kingdoms and territories during their years of conquest. Keep and adapt the gods of everyone, including Silba, whose dominance over the healers had been established in these lands long ago. History was written by the victors, apparently. Or so Irisha, Irene's direct tutor, had once told her. Even the gods seemed no more immune to it than mere mortals. But it didn't stop Irene from offering up a prayer to Silba, and whatever gods might be listening. As she said at last, "I am ready. Yes. To leave us." Such simple words, offered with that neutral face. Calm and patient. "Or have you considered the other option I presented to you?" Irene had. She'd thought about it endlessly in the 2 weeks since Hafiza had summoned her to this office, and spoke the one word that had clenched a fist around her heart. Stay. Stay and learn more. Stay and see what this fledgling life she'd built here might grow into. Irene rubbed at her chest as if she could still feel that vice-like grip. "War is coming to my home again. The Northern Continent." So they called it here. Irene swallowed. "I want to be there to help those fighting against the Empire's control." At last, after so many years, a force was rallying. Otterlin itself had been sundered, if rumors were to be believed, by Dorian Havilliard in the north, and the Dead King's second, Duke Parrington, in the south. Dorian was backed by Aelin Galathinius, the long-lost queen now ripe with power and ravenous for vengeance, judging by what she'd done to the Glass Castle and its king. And Parrington, rumor also claimed, was aided by horrors birthed from some dark nightmare. But if this was the only chance at freedom for Fen Harrow, Irene would be there to help, in whatever way she could. She still smelled smoke, late at night, or when she was drained after a hard healing. Smoke from that fire those Otterlanian soldiers had built and burned her mother upon. She still heard her mother screaming and felt the wood of that tree trunk dig beneath her nails as she'd hidden at the edge of Oakwald, as she watched them burn her mother alive. after her mother had killed that soldier, to buy Irene time to run. It had been 10 years since then, nearly 11. And though she had crossed mountains and oceans, there were some days when Irene felt as if she were still standing in Fen Harrow, smelling that fire, splinters slicing under her nails, watching as the soldiers took their torches and burned her cottage, too. The cottage that had housed generations of Tower's healers. Irene supposed it was fitting, somehow, she'd wound up in a tower herself, with only the ring on her left hand as proof that once, for hundreds of years, there had existed a line of prodigally gifted female healers in the south of Fen Harrow. A ring she now toyed with. That last shred of proof that her mother and mother's mother, and all the mothers before them, had once lived and healed in peace. It was the first of only two objects Irene would not sell, even before selling herself. Hafiza had not replied, and so Irene went on, the sun sinking farther toward the jade waters of the harbor across the city. Even with magic now returned to the northern continent, many of the healers might not have the training, if any survived at all. I could save many lives. War could also claim your life. She knew this. Irene lifted her chin. I am aware of the risks. Hafiza's dark eyes softened. Yes. Yes, you are. It had come out during that first mortifying meeting with the healer on high. Irene had not cried for years, since that day her mother had become ash on the wind. And yet the moment Hafiza had asked about Irene's parents, she had buried her face in her hands and wept. Hafiza had come from around that desk and held her, rubbing her back in soothing circles. Hafiza often did that, not just to Irene, but to all her healers. When the hours were long and their backs had cramped and the magic had taken everything, and it was still not enough. A quiet, steady presence who steeled them, soothed them. Hafiza was as close to a mother as Irene had found since she was 11. And now weeks away from 22, she doubted she'd ever find another like her. I have taken the examinations, Irene said, even though Hafiza knew that already. She'd given them to Irene herself, overseeing the grueling week of tests on knowledge, skill, and actual human practice. Irene had made sure she received the highest marks of her class, as near to a perfect score as anyone had ever been given here. I'm ready. Indeed you are. And yet, I still wonder how much you might learn in 5 years, 10 years, if you have already learned so much in 2. Irene had been too skilled to begin with the acolytes in the lower levels of the Torre. She'd shadowed her mother since she was old enough to walk and talk, learning slowly over the years, as all the healers in her family had done. At 11, Irene had learned more than most would in another decade. And even during the 6 years that had followed, where she'd pretended to be an ordinary girl while working on her mother's cousin's farm, the family unsure what to really do with her, unwilling to get to know her when war and Otterlin might destroy them all, she'd quietly practiced. But not too much, not too noticeably. During those years, neighbor had sold out neighbor for even the whisper of magic. And even though magic had vanished, taking Silba's gift with it, Irene had been careful never to appear more than a simple farmer's relative, whose grandmother had perhaps taught her a few natural remedies for fevers or birthing pain or sprained and broken limbs. In Inish, she'd been able to do more, using her sparse pocket money to purchase herbs, salves. But she didn't often dare, not with Nolan and Jessa, his favored barmaid, watching her day and night. So these past 2 years, she'd wanted to learn as much as she could. But it had also been an unleashing, of years of stifling, of lying and hiding. And that day she'd walked off the boat and felt her magic stir, felt it reach for a man limping down the street. She had fallen into a state of shock that had not ended until she'd wound up weeping in this very chair 3 hours later. Irene sighed through her nose. I could return here one day to continue my studies. But, with all due respect, I am a full healer now. And she could venture wherever her gift called her. Hafiza's white brows rose, stark against her brown skin. And what of Prince Caution? Irene shifted in her seat. What of him? You were once good friends. He remains fond of you. And that is no small thing to ignore. Irene leveled a look few dared to direct toward the healer on high. Will he interfere with my plans to leave? He is a prince, and has been denied nothing, save the crown he covets. He may find that your leaving is not something he will tolerate. Dread sluiced through her, starting at her spine and ending curled deep in her gut. I've given him no encouragement. I made my thoughts on that matter perfectly clear last year. It had been a disaster. She'd gone over it again and again. The things she'd said, the moments between them. Everything that had led up to that awful conversation in that large Dargon tent atop the windswept steps. It had started a few months after she'd arrived in Antica, when one of Caution's favored servants had fallen ill. To her surprise, the prince himself had been at the man's bedside. And during the long hours Irene worked, the conversation had flowed, and she'd found herself smiling. She'd cured the servant, and upon leaving that night, she'd been escorted by Caution himself to the gates of the Torre. And in the months that followed, friendship had sprung up between them, perhaps freer, lighter than the friendship she also wound up forming with Hasar, who had taken a liking to Irene after requiring some healing of her own. And while Irene had struggled to find companions within the Torre, thanks to her and her fellow students' conflicting hours, the prince and princess had become friends indeed, as had Hasar's lover, the sweet-faced Renya, who was as lovely inside as she was out. A strange group they made, but Irene had enjoyed their company. The dinners Caution and Hasar invited her to, when Irene knew she had no reason to really be there. Caution often managed to find a way to sit next to her, or near enough to engage her in conversation. For months, things had been fine. Better than fine. And then Hafiza had brought Irene out to the steps, the native home of the Coggins family, to oversee a grueling healing, with Caution as their escort and guide. The healer on high now examined Irene, frowning slightly. Perhaps your lack of encouragement has made him more eager. Irene rubbed her eyebrows with her thumb and forefinger. We've barely spoken since then. It was true. Though mostly due to Irene avoiding him at the dinners to which Hasar and Renya still invited her. The prince does not seem like a man easily deterred. Certainly not in matters of the heart. She knew that. She liked that about Caution. Until he'd wanted something she couldn't give him. Irene groaned a bit. Will I have to leave like a thief in the night, then? Hasar would never forgive her. Though she had no doubt Renya would try to soothe and rationalize it to the princess. If Hasar was pure flame, then Renya was flowing water. Should you decide to remain, you will not have to worry about such things at all. Irene straightened. You would really use Caution as a way to keep me here? Hafiza laughed, a crow of warmth. No. But forgive an old woman for trying to use any avenue necessary to convince you. Pride and guilt eddied in her chest. But Irene said nothing, had no answer. Returning to the northern continent, she knew there was no one and nothing left there for her. Nothing but unforgiving war, and those who would need her help. She did not even know where to go, where to sail, how to find those armies and their wounded. She'd traveled far and wide before, had evaded enemies bent on slaughtering her, and the thought of doing it all again. She knew some would think her mad, ungrateful for the offer Hafiza had laid before her. She'd thought those things of herself for a long while now. Yet not a single day passed without Irene gazing toward the sea at the foot of the city, gazing northward. Irene's attention indeed slid from the healer on high to the windows behind her, to the distant, darkening horizon, as if it were a lodestone. Hafiza said, a shade more gently, "There is no rush to decide. Wars take a long time. But I will need... There is a task I would first have you do, Irene." Irene stilled at that tone, the hint of command in it. She glanced to the letter Hafiza had been reading when she'd entered. "What is it?" "There is a guest at the palace, a special guest of the Khagan. I would ask you to treat him. Before you decide whether now is the right time to leave these shores, or if it is better to remain." Irene angled her head. Rare. Very rare for Hafiza to pass off a task from the Khagan to someone else. "What is his ailment?" Common standard words for healers receiving cases. "He is a young man, age 23, healthy in every regard, in fit condition. But he suffered a grave injury to his spine earlier this summer that left him paralyzed from the hips downward. He cannot feel or move his legs, and has been in a wheeled chair since. I am bypassing the initial physician's examination to appeal directly to you." Irene's mind churned. A complex, long process to heal that manner of injury. Spines were nearly as difficult as brains, connected to them quite closely. With that sort of healing, it wasn't a matter of letting her magic wash over them. That wasn't how it worked. It was finding the right places and channels, in finding the correct amount of magic to wield. It was getting the brain to again send signals to the spine, down those broken pathways. It was replacing the damaged smallest kernels of life within the body with new, fresh ones. And on top of it, learning to walk again. Weeks. Months, perhaps. "He is an active young man," Hafiza said. "The injury is akin to the warrior you aided last winter on the steps." She'd guessed as much already. It was likely why she'd been asked. 2 months spent healing the horse lord who'd taken a bad fall off his mount and injured his spine. It was not an uncommon injury among the Dargon, some of whom rode horses and some of whom soared on rooks. And they had long relied on the Torre's healers. Working on the warrior had been her first time putting her lessons on the subject into effect, precisely why Hafiza had accompanied her to the steps. Irene was fairly confident she could do another healing on her own this time, but it was the way Hafiza glanced down at the letter, just once, that made Irene pause, made her ask, "Who is he?"
"Lord Kaol Westfall."
Not a name from the Khaganate. Hafiza added, holding Irene's gaze,
"He was the former captain of the guard, and is now hand to the new king of Otterlin."
Silence. Irene was silent, in her head, her heart. Only the crying of the gulls sailing above the Torre, and the shouts of vendors going home for the night, in the streets beyond the compound's high walls, filled the tower room.
"No,"
the word pushed out of Irene on a breath. Hafiza's slim mouth tightened.
"No,"
Irene said again.
"I will not heal him."
There was no softness, nothing motherly in Hafiza's face, as she said,
"You took an oath upon entering these halls."
"No."
It was all she could think to say.
"I am well aware how difficult it may be for you."
Her hands started shaking.
"No."
"Why?"
"You know why."
The words were a strangled whisper.
You know.
If you see Adarlanian soldiers suffering on those battlefields, will you stomp right over them? It was the cruelest Hafiza had ever been to her. Irene rubbed the ring on her finger.
If he was captain of the guard for the last king, he
worked for the man who... The words spilled and stumbled out. He took orders from him. And now works for Dorian Havilliard.
Who indulged in his father's riches. The riches of my people. Even if Dorian Havilliard did not participate, the fact that he stood back while it happened...
The pale stone walls pressed in, even the solid tower beneath them feeling unwieldy.
Do you know what the king's men did these years?
What his armies, his soldiers, his guards did? And you ask me to heal a man who commanded them. It is a reality of who you are. Who we are. A choice all healers must make.
And you have made it so often? In your peaceful kingdom?
Hafiza's face darkened. Not with ire, but memory. I was once asked to heal a man who was injured while evading capture. After he had committed a crime so unspeakable. The guards told me what he'd done before I walked into his cell. They wanted him patched up so he could live to be put on trial. He'd undoubtedly be executed. They had victims willing to testify and proof aplenty. Irisha herself saw the latest victim. His last one. Gathered all the evidence she needed and stood in that court and condemned him with what she had seen. Hafiza's throat bobbed. They chained him down in that cell. And he was hurt enough that I knew. I knew I could use my magic to make the internal bleeding worse. They'd never know. He'd be dead by morning, and no one would dare question me. She studied the vial of blue tonic. It was the closest I have ever come to killing. I wanted to kill him for what he had done. The world would be better for it. I had my hands on his chest. I was ready to do it. But I remembered. I remembered that oath I had taken. And remembered that they had asked me to heal him so that he would live. So that justice might be found for his victims. And their families. She met Irene's eyes. It was not my death to dole out.
What happened?
The words were a wobble. He tried to plead innocent. Even with what Irisha presented, with what that victim was willing to talk about. He was a monster through and through. They convicted him. And he was executed at sunrise the next day.
Did you watch it?
I did not. I came back up here. But Irisha did. She stood at the front of the crowd and stayed until they hauled his corpse into a cart. She stayed for the victims who could not bear to watch. Then she returned here. And we both cried for a long, long while. Irene was quiet for a few breaths. Enough that her hands steadied.
So I am to heal this man. So he may find justice elsewhere.
You do not know his story, Irene. I suggest listening to it before contemplating such things. Irene shook her head.
There will be no justice for him.
Not if he served the old and new king. Not if he's cunning enough to remain in power. I know how Adarlan works. Hafiza watched her for a long moment. The day you walked into this room, so terribly thin and covered with the dust of 100 roads, I had never sensed such a gift. I looked into those beautiful eyes of yours, and I nearly gasped at the uncut power in you.
Disappointment.
It was disappointment on the healer on High's face, in her voice. I thought to myself, Hafiza went on, where has this young woman been hiding? What god reared you, guided you to my doorstep?
Your dress was in tatters around your ankles. And yet you walked in, straight-backed as any noble lady, as if you were the heir to Kamala herself. Until Irene had dumped the money on the desk and fallen apart moments later. She doubted the very first healer on high had ever done such a thing. Even your family name, Towers. A hint at your foremother's long-ago association with the Torre, perhaps. I wondered in that moment if I had at last found my heir. My replacement. Irene felt the words like a blow to the gut. Hafiza had never so much as hinted. Stay, the healer on high had offered. To not only continue the training, but to also take up the mantle now laid before her. But it had not been Irene's own ambition to one day claim this room as her own. Not when her sights had always been set across the narrow sea. And even now, it was an honor beyond words, yes, but one that rang hollow. I asked what you wanted to do with the knowledge I would give you. Hafiza went on. Do you remember what you said to me? Irene did. She had not forgotten it for a moment. I said, I wanted to use it to do some good for the world. To do something with my useless, wasted life. The words had guided her these years, along with the note she carried every day, moving it from pocket to pocket, dress to dress. Words from a mysterious stranger. Perhaps a god who had worn the skin of a battered young woman, whose gift of gold had gotten her here. Saved her. And so you shall, Irene, Hafiza said. You shall one day return home, and you shall do good. You shall do wonders. But before you do, I would ask this of you. Help that young man. You have done the healing before. You can do it again now. Why can't you? She'd never sounded so sullen, so ungrateful. Hafiza gave her a small, sad smile. It is not my own healing that is needed. Irene knew the healer on high did not mean the man's healing either. She swallowed against the thickness in her throat. It is a soul wound, Irene. And letting it fester these years, I cannot blame you. But I will hold you accountable if you let it turn into something worse. And I will mourn you for it. Irene's lips wobbled, but she pressed them together, blinking back the burning in her eyes. You passed the tests, better than anyone who has ever climbed into this tower, Hafiza said softly. But let this be my personal test for you, the final one, so that when you decide to go, I may bid you farewell, send you off to war. And know, Hafiza put a hand on her chest, know that wherever the road takes you, however dark, you will be all right. Irene swallowed the small sound that tried to come out of her, and instead looked toward the city, its pale stones resplendent in the last light of the setting sun. Through the open windows behind the healer on high, a night breeze laced with lavender and cloves flitted in, cooling her face, and ruffling Hafiza's cloud of white hair. Irene slid a hand into the pocket of her pale blue dress, her fingers wrapping around the familiar smoothness of the folded piece of parchment. She clutched it, as she had often done on the sailing over here. During those initial few weeks of uncertainty, even after Hafiza had admitted her. During the long hours and hard days and moments that had nearly broken her while she trained. A note, written by a stranger who had saved her life and granted her freedom in a matter of hours. Irene had never learned her name. That young woman who had worn her scars like some ladies wore their finest jewelry. The young woman who was a trained killer, but had purchased a healer's education. So many things. So many good things had come from that night. Irene sometimes wondered if it had actually happened. might have believed she'd dreamed it if not for the note in her pocket, and the second object Irene had never sold, even when the gold had thinned. The ornate gold and ruby brooch, worth more than entire blocks of Antica. Otterlin's colors. Irene had never learned where the young woman had come from, who had bestowed the beating that had left lingering bruises on her pretty face. But she had spoken of Otterlin as Irene did, as all the children who had lost everything to Otterlin did. Those children with their kingdoms left in ash and blood and ruin. Irene ran a thumb over the note, the words inked there. "For wherever you need to go, and then some. The world needs more healers." Irene breathed in that first night breeze, the spices and brine it ushered into the Torre. She looked back to Hafiza at last, the healer on High's face calm. Patient. Irene would regret it if she refused. Hafiza would yield, but Irene knew that whether she left here, whether she somehow decided to remain, she would regret. Think back on this. Wonder if she had repaid the extraordinary kindness she'd been given rather poorly. Wonder what her mother would have thought of it. And even if this man hailed from Otterlin, even if he'd done the bidding of that butcher, "I will meet with him. Assess him," Irene conceded. Her voice only wobbled slightly. She clutched that piece of paper in her pocket. "And then, decide if I will heal him." Hafiza considered. "Fair enough, girl," she said quietly. "Fair enough." Irene blew out a shaking breath. "When do I see him?" "Tomorrow," Hafiza said, and Irene winced. "The Coggin has asked you to come to Lord Westfall's chambers tomorrow." Chapter 5. Kaol had barely slept, partially due to the unrelenting heat, partially due to the fact that they were in a tentative allies fraught household, full of potential spies and unknown dangers, perhaps even from Morath itself, and partially due to what had befallen Rifthold and all he held dear, and partially due to the meeting that he was now minutes away from having. Nezrin paced with uncharacteristic nerves through the sitting room that was to be his sick room. Low-lying couches and clusters of cushions filled the space. The shining floors interrupted only by rugs of thickest and finest weaving, from the skilled hands of craftswomen in the West, Nezrin told him. Art and treasures from across the Coggin's Empire adorned the space, interspersed with potted palms sagging in the heat, and sunlight trickling through the garden windows and doors. 10 in the morning, the Coggin's eldest daughter had declared to him at dinner last night. Princess Hassar, plain and yet fierce-eyed. A lovely young woman had sat at her side, the only person at whom Hassar smiled. Her lover or wife, judging by the frequent touching and long looks. There had been enough of an edge to Hassar's wicked grin, as she told Kaol when the healer would arrive, that he'd been left to wonder who, precisely, they were sending. He still did not know what to make of these people, this place, this city of high learning, this blend of so many cultures and history, peacefully dwelling together. Not at all like the raging and broken spirits dwelling in Otterlin's shadow, living in terror, distrusting one another, enduring its worst crimes. They'd asked him about the butchering of the slaves in Calicalla and Endovir at dinner. Or the oily one, Argon, did. Had the prince been among Kaol's new recruits to the royal guard, he would have easily gotten him to fall in line thanks to a few well-timed shows of skill and sheer dominance. But here, he had no authority to bring the conniving, haughty prince to heel. Not even when Argon wanted to know why the former king of Otterlin had deemed it necessary to enslave his people, and then put them down like animals. Why the man had not looked to the southern continent for education on the horrors and stain of slavery, and avoided instituting it.
Kaol had offered curt answers that verged on impolite. Sartak, the only one of them beyond Kashin whom Kaol was inclined to like, had finally tired of his elder brother's